Science writer Sarah Zhang started covering COVID-19 for The Atlantic at about the same time people in the U.S. were first hearing of it. Over the past year, her stories have been about microbes, saying goodbye to dying patients over Zoom, and what it's been like covering the pandemic as a Chinese American. She's now deep into the vaccine beat, tracking one of the biggest public health challenges in history, mass immunization.
What the whole pandemic has taught me is that science can move really, really quickly. We've learned so much about this virus in a year, but the things that really matter in public health, getting public to listen, communicating, those things are hard. The science alone is not enough.
So the vaccine in production now, these are mRNA vaccines. How are those different from the familiar standards, smallpox, polio, diphtheria?
Yeah. So traditional vaccines work by essentially giving you a little piece of the virus so that your immune system can recognize it. You might think of it as a wanted poster. So traditionally, this would be in the form of an inactivated virus or a weakened virus or maybe even just a fragment of a virus. mRNA vaccines, they actually give you the instructions to print out the wanted poster. So the mRNA is basically a little molecule that is instruction for your body to make the spike protein that is the, kind of on the outside of the coronavirus capsule. So it's all these little spikes. It's how it enters the cell. It's a really important piece of the virus itself. So the way the mRNA vaccine works is that it's encased in a little protective bubble of fat, which helps get it inside your cells. And once the mRNA is inside your cell, gives your body the instruction to make that spike protein. And with that spike protein, your body is able to recognize, oh, this is something foreign going on. Let me make antibodies against it. Let me stimulate immune response against it. So by the time you actually see a virus, it's kind of primed and ready to go. The instructions, the mRNA disappear after a while. So does the spike protein itself. And all you're kind of left is with this immune memory. So there's no way to get sick. There's no way to get COVID from getting the vaccine.
Because you're never being injected with COVID.
Exactly. You're just getting injected with like a really small piece of the virus that by itself can't infect you.
People who've gotten the vaccine already have reported that there can be some, I don't know if I want to call them severe side effects, but strong side effects, you know, like worse than the usual sore arm you get from the flu vaccine.
Yeah. It has a bit of a kick. So
that makes it sound like a cocktail.
Well, it's one of those things that will fortify you for the future, right? The technical term is a reactogenicity. So what that means is that it stimulates a strong immune response. And that can feel like getting sick because when you get a fever, when you get a sore throat, when you feel achy, that's actually all caused by your immune response. It's not necessarily caused by, you know, the virus or the pathogen itself. So the same thing is happening when you get a vaccine. It's that it stimulates an immune response.
So is it actually a good sign? Does it mean that your body is developing the immunity? It's working?
Yeah, it means that the immune system is gearing up to action and ready to do its job.
And in the meantime, there's not enough vaccine for everyone. Even those who can get it will need more than one dose before they're fully immune. I mean, it's not like a magic bullet.
No.
You wrote this great piece recently talking about this period of time as vaccine purgatory. Can you explain what you meant?
Yeah. We're about to enter this new phase where some people are going to have the vaccine. Other people aren't going to have access to it yet. What you should do once you get the vaccine is a little bit unclear. How immune are you? Kind of can vary person to person. You don't really know. So I think we're just going to be in this period of flux where we're waiting for a vaccine, but there's not enough. And I described it as purgatory. As purgatory goes, I think one of the biggest questions is how long this is going to last. But as we're seeing over the past month, it's also going to take a long time to actually get these vaccines into arms.
What would the people in the public health community, what would be like your best case scenario? Would it be that the federal government just takes this over and the army moves in and sets up clinics everywhere and administers the vaccine?
Yeah, you know, I think it's actually a little bit hard to say because I think that is certainly very efficient, right? But I think people in public health community are also worried about, well, if it's the army setting up these mass vaccination clinics, are people going to trust that? Or will they prefer to get their vaccine from their local doctor's office with a doctor they already know? There's a bit of a tension between doing things kind of as quickly and efficiently as possible and doing things in a way that builds trust and feels fair. So I don't know if there's really a right answer. And I think that's part of what we're seeing right now is that every community is kind of trying to figure it out for themselves.
Yeah. And then what happens if we wind up with some places, some states, some cities where everybody's vaccinated and there are other places where very few people are vaccinated?
Yeah, right. We keep talking about herd immunity as if it's like a national thing, right? But it's actually a local thing because it's possible, as you say, to have everyone vaccinated in one town, but maybe the next town over, there are still enough people who are vulnerable to COVID that an outbreak can break out. So I think the fact that we're going to have this patchwork means that, well, first of all, I think COVID is so widespread that the virus is probably never going to go away. It's going to be with us to some extent, like the flu every year. But you're probably going to see bigger outbreaks in places where fewer people have been vaccinated. And this just might be, in addition to flu season, we're going to have COVID season every year.
Man, it's so strange to think about. And also to think about folks in Silicon Valley are all going to be super vaccinated before everybody else versus, you know, a neighborhood in Detroit. Do you worry about that kind of inequality?
Yeah. I think one of the things that vaccine experts will talk about is that, you know, the people who can most advocate for themselves, who say they want the vaccine, are often not necessarily the people who most need a vaccine. The priority populations, people who are elderly, people who are frontline workers, but also people who can't get to a vaccine clinic, right? Like they have to work during the day. They can't take time off to go vaccinated. If you're elderly or you're homebound, how are you going to go out and get vaccinated? So I think public health departments have a really big challenge in that the last 20, 30% of people is going to be a lot harder than the first 20 or 30% of people.
Thinking back over the kind of big lessons of all of this and big challenges, one of them, it seems to me, is just how much uncertainty there has been this whole way through. And maybe that's always true in science stories, but it's a lot easier to handle the mystery of a black hole than the mystery of a virus that could kill you.
I'm so glad you asked that because I feel like the past, year have been about learning how to live with uncertainty and how to make decisions with imperfect information. I have gotten so many questions like, is this thing safe to do? You know, if I do this and this and this, can I go visit my grandparents? And maybe the way to think about this has never been, is this completely safe or completely not safe? It's always going to be, what is the amount of risk you're willing to take? It's hard, right? It's hard to be like, oh, we don't know. But we don't know doesn't mean absolutely nothing. It means we have some amount of prior knowledge based on experience with other viruses, based on what we've known about how this virus spread so far. So I think learning how to make decisions with imperfect knowledge is what we've all had to do over this past year. And actually, that's what we're doing all the time in our lives, right? It's just that we often expect science to have a clear answer, and we don't. And we're just, this is a fact of life. We live with having to make decisions based on uncertain information.
I can imagine this sort of horrible feeling of helplessness. As you say, how many articles can you put out saying, stay the hell home?
Yeah.
And yet, people don't.
Yeah, I think my colleagues and I definitely got to a point where it did feel that way. I think especially around Thanksgiving, you know, right, when it was quite clear what was going to happen if lots of people were going to travel, but then people are understandably very fed up with the pandemic and want to have some little bit of joy and semblance of normalcy. Fortunately for me, for the past few months, I've been covering vaccines, which is actually something where things are happening and there's optimism. I think the question on everyone's mind at this point is just, when is this going to be over?
Yeah.
And vaccines are going to be a big part of that. So at least I get to write about the piece that looks at the end rather than just at this indeterminable present.
You know, it's funny. This just seems like a perfect example, this conversation, in that it seems like every time it feels like we've made some progress or there's a reason to be hopeful, something else sort of smashes that down. Like, the second strain of the virus comes along.
Mm.
Are you still hopeful? And, you know, how do you manage to stay that way?
am I still hopeful? Well, I'm probably going to get married this year, right? So I think...
Oh, congratulations.
We're not going to have a big wedding or anything, but I think I am hopeful that our lives, you know, 6 months, a year from now are going to look quite a lot more normal than they are right now. I think the vaccines, because honestly, as I said, they're just so much better than anyone really expected. I think that really did give me a good dose of optimism that there is an end to this. I'm clear-eyed about the challenges that are ahead, but that's just really wonderful news. And I think we should revel in that for a moment.
Sorry, my pandemic puppy is at my feet barking.
No worries.
Yeah. Anyway, I hope there will be an it's all over moment. Do you have in mind even a little thing where you'll feel like, okay, it's over?
Yeah, probably when I eat in a restaurant, like inside a restaurant again, and like it feels normal and I'm not worried about is everyone wearing a mask. I will probably will get a vaccine this year, and I'm really looking forward to that.
That was Sarah Zhang. She's a staff writer for The Atlantic magazine.